Welcome to the Voice Over Work podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at how to teach anything. Break down complex topics and explain with clarity while keeping engagement and motivation. Written by Peter Hollins, narrated by Russell Newton. Chapter 1. Lessons from the Science of Pedagogy. Imagine you're with a friend who has asked you to show them how to do something that you're an expert in. They know nothing and need to be taught. How do you go about doing this? Most of us are more familiar with being in the shoes of the student and not the teacher. And when we're put on the spot like this, we're confronted with an interesting perspective. Seeing knowledge from the perspective of the one who has to communicate it to someone else. You probably had a few favorite teachers in school or university, but what exactly made them so effective? If you consider yourself a lifelong student and autodidact, you probably know that your theoretical approach, your attitude, and your methods make all the difference. In this book, we'll be looking at learning, but through the less common perspective of a teacher. But rather than focusing on the philosophy of education in general or on school curricula, we'll be exploring the most fundamental underpinnings of what makes an excellent teacher, whether it's formally in the classroom or simply when helping out a friend. The wonderful side effect is that mastering the role of an effective teacher has a way of making you a better learner, as you become familiar with learning and knowledge acquisition as a worthy subject in itself. We'll start with the foundations of pedagogy, or the study of education and learning. But hopefully by the end of the book, you'll be able to use these general principles in creative ways that extend well beyond the standard teacher-student context. Five key pedagogical approaches. Teaching is, in essence, a kind of conversation where new information is communicated and conveyed to a person who doesn't possess it. The approach you take depends on how you see the student, the teacher, the relationship between them, the information, and the rules governing the transfer of knowledge. 2. Seeing the landscape. In all this talk of scaffolding, of laying out plans to reach goals, and of carefully organizing learning so that information is delivered in manageable chunks, you might have wondered, who gets to decide on these goals, these baby steps, or these chunks? In the previous chapter, we saw that it was important to lay out new information systematically for your student. After all, this is exactly what a teacher's job is. But then the question becomes, what's the best way to do this? Good teachers have an advantage of perspective compared to their students, who can only see small and unclear sections of the bigger whole. The teacher can see it all and understands how everything connects to the bigger picture. In fact, it's this advantage and perspective that allows the teacher to impart anything of value to the student at all. Otherwise, it would simply be two students blundering around together trying to find their way. Good teachers can see the full landscape and know what's in front of them. This allows them to prioritize tasks, to frame things correctly, to set goals. This may seem unimportant if you're unused to teaching, but it is, in fact, the single most significant thing you do as a teacher, because it influences the entire way you think about the material in front of you and how you convey it to your student. Seeing the landscape incompletely or incorrectly means you give your student a faulty vision to work within, thus compromising their learning. Without a sensible roadmap through the territory, so to speak, you may get lost, find yourself disorganized or confused, or unable to anticipate or predict issues or opportunities ahead of you. On a more basic level, you simply won't inspire confidence or... 3. The nuts and bolts. The previous chapters have covered basic principles and theoretical approaches to adopt as you set out on the task of becoming the best teacher you can. But you might have read all this and wondered what it actually looked like in practice. In this chapter, we're digging into the more hands-on aspects of teaching and looking at a few popular methods and techniques for applying the philosophy we've already outlined. So as you read, bear in mind that the technique is much the same, whether you're a teacher, a student, or a bit of both. You're essentially looking at the same process from two different sides, teacher and student. The more you understand about these two different perspectives, the more enriched you'll be, whether you're trying to learn about XYZ or help someone else learn about it. In fact, this is the reason that many teacher training programs have trainee teachers deliberately take on the role of student as an exercise, so they can better understand the other side and more effectively cross the divide. Now, let's dive in. The SQ3R method. For the large majority of school subjects, textbooks are the core of the study program, along with lectures and discussions. A typical teacher's entire lesson plan for a year usually draws from the structure and sequence of at least one textbook. These volumes are, more often than not, forbiddingly big. Multiply one large book by the number of classes a student has in any given semester, and you've got a seriously overweight backpack, nearly as heavy as every one of your teacher's expectations that you read every single one. Textbooks are dense, detailed, heavily annotated, and long. It's easy to for advanced techniques. Our previous chapter covered some possibly familiar ground, i.e., how a student can work smarter, not harder, and use a range of cognitive tools in the most efficient, logical, and satisfying way. In this chapter, we're going a little further and looking at approaches and techniques that delve deeper. Here, we'll be extending beyond the usual classroom-based techniques and looking more philosophically at the process of acquiring knowledge itself. What does it really mean to be someone's guide, mentor, trainer? How can we exploit a more sophisticated understanding of how this strange thing called learning, capital L, really works for ourselves and for our students? Problem-based learning. There's an urban legend about novice metalworkers. Their teachers tell them to carve a complex structure out of a solid block of metal with only hand tools at their disposal. After they complete this tedious and seemingly impossible problem, what do you suppose was accomplished by the student? They became true experts with hand tools. What about famous Mr. Miyagi from the Karate Kid movie? Who can forget how he taught his student, Daniel-san, to perform hard labor, and yet, after this goal was achieved, it turned out Daniel-san learned the basics of karate. Through solving a problem or reaching for a goal, learning was made inevitable. Problem-based learning, PBL, is where you start with a problem that needs to be solved, and you force learning through the process of solving that problem. You try to accomplish a goal that necessitates learning. Instead of setting out to learn X, the idea is to set a goal of solving problem Y, and in the process. Chapter 5, The Student Environment. In the previous chapters, our focus has been on what you, as the prospective teacher, can do to make your students' learning experience as good as it can be. But throughout, we've acknowledged that a teacher's role is always that of a facilitator, someone who allows the natural processes of learning to occur optimally. A big part of this is creating the environmental conditions most conducive to genuine learning. The student environment is more than just the immediate physical surroundings, though. Here, we'll discuss how the student, teacher, environment, and material are all in close relationship, and an effective teacher is one who can make sure all four are properly aligned to best lead to success. This requires a set of effective attitudes, an understanding of habit and motivation, and a spirit of resilience, as well as a learning atmosphere that fosters learning rather than fear or avoidance. Teachers can often have difficulty not with the material itself or finding the smartest, most efficient way to present it. Rather, their trouble comes in when they try to inspire and motivate students who simply don't care. It's as though in teaching, there are always two lessons running in parallel, one concerning the actual material at hand, and another running in the background, where the student is learning discipline, stamina, and self-regulation as they move through the process of learning. Understanding motivation. Unless a student is motivated to learn, they won't learn. Without motivation, intelligence doesn't matter, and the supposed value of the material doesn't matter either. But why are people motivated to do some things and not others? This has been How to Teach Anything. Break down complex topics and explain with clarity while keeping engagement and motivation. Written by Peter Hollins. Narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2021 by Peter Hollins. Production copyright by Peter Hollins. More information regarding today's book and the author can be found at audible.com or amazon.com. With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Over Work podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.